So yeah, they built to Andre the Giant winning the main event. They had some other pretty well booked matches. I mean, I think when you think about it, there were things that that kind of made some sense on the show. They had the tag team match, so it would have been a 10 man on each team Survivor Series match.
10 people on each team.
Yep. Yeah. So I mean, they had that, but the depth of the roster was okay. It wasn't overwhelming, and I think for the most
thing I wanted to point out, logistically speaking, everything is booked to a fine precision. This is what I really like about Pat Patterson's booking.
Okay.
He is very, very mathematically oriented in his booking. There was a Survivor's match with a bunch of world title contenders. There was a Survivor match with Intercontinental title people.
You know, I'm looking at this, and that's
one and the women's one. Everyone was fit into their own little compartment.
No, that's certainly true. I mean, that's certainly true. And it, as little as they do, now lately they've gotten better in terms of the tag team titles now. The fact that they had 10 teams and they're competing, you thought, well, whoever the world tag team champions are must be a pretty big deal. I mean, they've got 10 teams in here trying, and the same thing for the Intercontinental title.
Right.
And this is when the Honky Tonk Man just ran away, right? He was in on his own. Yeah, and
perfect.
Yeah, and the booking made sense. It fit everybody's character to the point where he would be a coward. And then you wanted to see one of these guys, win the Intercontinental belt from him. So that right. certainly, you're right. I mean, Pat Patterson, always made some things that may not be the most talent look pretty good in some cases, and you knew people's motivation.
Yeah.
I do remember, I think I remember that Paul Orndorff was on Hulk Hogan's team, and his turn was pretty weak. I mean, they turned him back face, and it was like it didn't quite make sense that Hulk Hogan would team up with him. I remember thinking that. But outside of that, I mean, everything kind of made some sense. I mean, it was like Bobby Heenan fired him or was going to fire him, or I don't know. But
I don't know exactly, but that was the weakest part, just because they had to have a fifth guy for
right,
him.
Right, right, right. But, I'm looking at these results here, but Ken Patera, he'd been a Hulk Hogan follower since he came back. Don Morocco was kind of that ancillary type guy also. And, Bam Bam Bigelow.
He had a thing with Fuji. He had a thing with, with One Man Gang for injuring, in storyline terms, Superstar Graham.
Oh, that's right. And that's when Don Morocco came back probably having discovered some things at the pharmaceutical firms, looking like a $1 million again after being rather overweight before that. Yeah, so Superstar Billy Graham was his inspiration. Now, that's very good. That's right. And Bam Bam Bigelow, I'm guessing, was still being managed by Oliver Humperdinck then. I don't know, but that's when he spurned all the bad guy managers and went with Oliver Humperdinck.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, what's that?
If you had your choice of any manager, why would you choose
him? No, it doesn't. Well, I mean, except that, ostensibly he was wealthy because he did all those bounties in Florida, right?
That's right.
So if he would pay you all that money, maybe you would let him manage you. But no, I would agree with that. So, again, I can't go into the detail on these shows that you certainly can. And so anything you want to add to it, I'll be quiet and listen because – it did make sense. It built to the big match in February where Ted DiBiase tried to buy the world title and probably should have been, I don't know, maybe they should have given it. But anyway, that set up the tournament for the next WrestleMania, and it set up Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant to wrestle in a match that didn't have to have a finish, and then they could put the belt on Randy Savage. Right?
Right.
Yeah, that was the – Yeah, WrestleMania 4 was the one where Savage won the tournament over Ted DiBiase.
Right, because Hogan versus Andre ended in a double disqualification.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was double DQ or double count out or whatever it was. But, yeah, so, the booking made sense, and it all kind of flowed together pretty well. I don't think it was altogether a bad show. I mean, it's been years since I've seen it, so maybe you can comment on the quality of work in it better than I can, Dusty.
I think it's very underrated as far as Survivor Series go.
Okay.
The first one was very good. There wasn't a bad match in the bunch.
And Jumping Bomb Angels were certainly, am I correct in saying, extremely talented at that point and kind of
blew away almost everybody else on the roster.
Yeah, that was my impression, that they came in and really really put on a show and kind of made that women's match something special.
Yep.
And again, I don't know how many of these we want to go through year by year, but if you want to talk about the predatory practices, of course,
yeah,
Jim Crockett at least got...
Yeah, more what I wanted to do with this audio. I'd rather not go year by year or year by year. But basically, I just wanted to talk about, like, how it started, predatory practices, and then, like, the evolution over time.
Right, right. Well, I think one thing you have to add to the story for people that don't know
mm-hmm.
is the greatest and, for the longest time, most highly watched free TV event ever. Well, it's not the record anymore, but the following WrestleMania March of 1988, Jim Crockett put on Clash of the Champions,
yes.
The first one against WrestleMania. I remember, again, I did not have cable TV, but I got one of my parents' friends, which was extremely difficult at that time because anything about pro wrestling, my parents thought was the most ridiculous thing in the world, but I managed to find somebody with cable to record that thing, and I was so glad that I did because that WrestleMania was terrible from what everybody said going in, and I got the video again later of it and wasn't very impressed, but that's Ric Flair and Sting for 45 minutes. That's Midnight Express and the Fantastics, and one of the greatest matches that I believe started that pay-per-view, started that clash, and just a fantastic, I mean, pardon the words, but a fantastic match, unbelievable match.
That show also featured our friends in front row section D.
Yes, that was in Greensboro.
Holding up a cornet sign.
Yeah, they all had their suits and they all had their cornet. That's right. That's right. I remember seeing that. I didn't know who those people were, obviously, but
it was cool that there were heel fans, you know?
Absolutely. No, everything about Crockett's show was cooler than anything about WWF. I was probably, I would have been 15, 16 years old at this time. If you hated, you know, if you were from my area, you hated Hulk Hogan, you hated this crappy wrestling where they take guys like Dick Slater and put them in two-minute nothing matches. And Dick Slater may not be the best example because I remember seeing some of his AWA stuff from around that time, and it was nothing to write home about either. But, you know, Blackjack Mole, I mean, they'd bring these guys in and just misuse them so badly just to have them so other people couldn't get them. And it just some terrible stuff. Again, the whole Little Red Rooster thing, I thought Terry Taylor was in world class right before he went to WWF. And he had that whole thing with Chris Adams, and Chris Adams was almost as bad as Sting, and that he'd keep trusting Terry Taylor, and Terry Taylor would keep kicking his ass. And, you know, they had a great thing going in world class right before he went to WWF. And then he went there and, you know, was obviously this cartoon character joke. And
for the record, here's my stance on that.
Okay, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Go ahead.
Obviously, it's a ridiculous character. Obviously. There's no arguing that. My whole beef against him is, I mean, look, you're in the number one wrestling company in North America. And Vince is notorious for if he likes you, if you do well, he will reward you for it. So you got to just make the best of it and hope that something better comes along. And Terry Taylor carried himself like he wanted to slash his wrists. And you kind of just got to make lemonade out of it. And
okay.
I didn't really respect the way he, like, schlubbed around. And a lot of his matches, he works at half speed.
Yeah.
As the Red Rooster. And he just sort of gave up, you know?
No, he definitely did. I guess I would respectfully disagree in the fact of whose fault that was. I mean, who?
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Eugene went into his character with gusto, whereas, I mean, I know he had some external problems, but are you really going to get over with the mentally handicapped character? I mean,
no.
You know, you think you're a rooster, and you're telling Bobby Heenan that I'm so little and I'm so shitty and I'm this and that, but, you know, maybe someday, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I respect your stance on it, but
sure.
I guess, and again, I liked the guy before that. I thought he was very good, and
that's the thing, though. Like, before it, he seemed like he had more potential.
Yeah. No, I mean, there was no way he was going to come back from that, in my opinion. I don't see it. And I guess they signed a contract, and that was it. I mean, if he would have been better off, in my opinion, to I know he didn't have an in with Dusty, and that's why he left
right.
there, and he wasn't making any money at World Class, but I don't know. I mean, go to Japan. I don't do something because
yeah, there you go. There was lots of money to be had in Japan.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a good worker. I mean, in my opinion, I don't think he was Ric Flair or Ted DiBiase or something.
The Japanese would have respected him more.
Yeah, I think he could have found something, I guess.
And the WWF fans would have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so that's kind of that whole thing. But so Crockett did get somewhat even at WrestleMania the next year, and then.
Yeah.
You know, Survivor Series, I kind of looked through these things, and I think the next year it's maybe worth mentioning, I guess, in 88, that they were building very well to the Hulk Hogan-Randy Savage WrestleMania,
yep.
And that card did a good job of keeping the tension alive there. And I don't know if there's anything
Definitely.
Else that needs to be said about it, but...
I got some new business I got to take care of.
That's great. That's very good, yeah. So, and, you know, they built up to things. I mean, they, as you said,
2 years in a row where it's maybe not totally clear, but it's leading towards what they're going to do for WrestleMania.
No, absolutely. You could watch it and guess what WrestleMania was going to be. And not
yeah.
guess and, like, you look at today and say, like, from an insider perspective. I mean, you could watch as, you know, the fan and say, well, okay, this guy, you know, these are the best two guys. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
they have a problem with each other. They're going to build to something. And
the alternative, if they had just, like, kept straight with the feuds they were doing, it would have been Hogan versus Boss Man and Savage versus Bad News. And you knew they wouldn't do that
right.
in WrestleMania.
Right, right, right.
So then logistically you'd extend it out to, oh, okay, they must turn on each other.
Yeah.
And face each other. That makes sense.
And Savage would be the one to turn. I mean, yeah, it made sense, and it, you know, it was well booked. I mean, again, you go to Pat Patterson and A to B to C storytelling
mm-hmm.
that makes a lot of sense here. And I guess the only thing I would look at, I'm kind of scrolling through these results here. This is when, I guess, 88, well, you know, that's right. This is when they still were trying to make, since Demolition wasn't as good as the Road Warriors, they were trying to make
right.
the Powers of Pain as good as the Road Warriors, and that wasn't happening. But that's what that was. I think. Am I looking at the? I think that's right. Yeah, this is the '88 one. Yeah. So, you know, that was one of those things that they were never gonna do it. But that's the one thing that stands out. Not too much else stands out to me about that particular card. So I don't know.
No, it's in the same formula as the year prior.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as good, but the booking is still solid. Everything is pretty much right on.
Yeah, and again, I mean, they would build guys. I'm looking at these results here. You know, Ultimate Warrior had to win. I mean, he was being, they had him in mind, I think, as a world champion down the road already. And,
oh, yeah.
As the big draw. So that was where that was. For me, after this, I don't have a lot of recollection of the next few of these things.
Okay. Well, I want to breeze through anyway here.
Okay.
I will say that 89 marked a change. Instead of having 4 5-on-5 matches, they went with 5 4-on-4 matches.
Very true. Very true.
I don't know what is better. You can argue all day about which is better. I don't think one is necessarily better than the other, really. It's just different.
Well, and I think, again, it depends on how deep is your booking, right? I mean, can you – I don't think it was so bad. I mean, I criticize the Paul Orndorff thing, but if you're throwing guys in there, I mean, 5-on-5, I don't know, it kind of implies that – to me, it makes the brightest star shine a little brighter, right? That they're the captains of the team. They had captains. You know, these teams would have captains. It would be Hulk Hogan's team. And they'd always do these interviews where they'd all chant, survive, survive, survive. Or at least Bobby Heenan's team always would. I remember that. And,
they always had, like, little group meetings.
Yeah, I mean, that was always cool. I mean, because you really got the incentive or the idea that there was at least some method of cohesion and some method of teamwork within this individual sport. And it kind of made it fun to watch. And, you know, maybe that's why the AWA tried that Team Challenge series. I have no idea. And then they completely screwed that up. But
you talked about, like, watching wrestling with the rotary dial and stuff. And when I first started watching wrestling, it was Superstars on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
And then the weekly AWA show, I had to turn the dial, like, halfway over.
Yeah, yeah.
It would still come in real, real bad, but I'd watch it. And it was the Team Challenge series.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, I was getting that stuff, too. I was getting that. Springfield TV went from, well, the World Class channel always kind of stayed on there till pretty much the bitter end. That was a different channel. But the other channel went from, they started out with UWF. And then they went to 2 hours of UWF. They did Power Pro and the other thing. Then they went to NWA eventually. And then finally, they're kind of before they went off the air, they had an hour of AWA and an hour of NWA. And, boy, that AWA, that Team Challenge Series stuff was – I watched it, but – or at least I taped it. It wasn't DVR like today, but it was pretty tough. It wasn't. But the Destruction Crew was great on that thing. I mean,
I absolutely loved the Destruction Crew. They were my favorites.
No, they were badass, and we went and saw them wrestle in 1990 as the Minnesota Wrecking Crew 2. In Springfield. I think they had them lose to the Steiners there, and you know, they walked out without their masks. I mean, they weren't really trying to hide who they were that much. But
Really? I was going to ask you, because when I saw them, they had a mask on.
Well, no, I mean after the show. Like, we were idiot fan people that just kind of hung out after the show in the parking lot. And we were like, I wonder if they'll come out with their masks on. And they didn't. So, no, they wore their masks during the match, because they were trying to, you know, they were AWA Tag Team Champions, I mean, at that time. And they were out there losing to the Steiners, I assume, around the horn. But
they did.
And I think that's when they had Ric Flair go up and wrestle Brian Pillman on a AWA show to maybe pay Vern back for that, or however they were doing it. I don't know.
Because we're really long on time here, so I'm just going to bring up a couple more things.
Okay, very good.
I
guess I should mention, as I mentioned to you before, if you don't mind, that I was at Survivor Series 98, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions.
Okay, I didn't mean to steer
but,
you from
but,
it.
Well, I wanted to do one more thing before that. And
go
that's
for it.
Starting in 1992, they got away from the Survivor Series concept, and this
I'm looking
very,
at that. Yeah.
Very strange to me at the time, like why they didn't change the name or whatever, because it wasn't really the Survivor Series when it was all, except for one, regular matches, you know?
Right, and it looks like 92, they didn't have... Well, here they had the Nasty Boys and the Natural Disaster defeated Money, Inc. and the Beverly Brothers. So I guess that might have been a Survivor Series style match. I don't know.
It was. It was.
Okay.
That was their one Survivor match. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I never really cared for it. I don't know. I mean, I think you can have enough booking discipline again. Maybe if you want to have a separate championship match as an outlier, okay. But your undercard isn't that well developed anyway. Why can't you do it in Survivor Series framework? So
I think they just didn't have enough guys in 92.
Boy, this is a pretty weak card if you look at it. Yeah.
This is very, very weak, and this is the best of what they had, too.
Yeah.
So I can understand kind of why they did it, but it's still very bizarre.
Well, and, you know, that's probably why, even as deep as their roster was in 87,
mm-hmm.
of course, they had the 10-man match, too, but they had that women's match. I mean, they weren't promoting women's wrestling, really, to any real extent, but they filled that in. They could have done that or I don't know.
Some of the women in that women's match were dusted out of the tomb, man. Donna Christianella was older than Moolah, you know?
I noticed some of those names. Let me check something real quick here. I'm on 88. I want to look at 87 if it'll come up. Here it is. I don't know if one of my high school history teacher, his cousin or niece was Penny Mitchell, but she isn't in this match. So she wrestled, I think, for some for WWF. You'd see her name in the after mags from time to time.
Yes, yes.
And so I said, well, she really is a wrestler. Okay.
I
don't know how they were related, but I remember she's from Crane, Missouri. That was brought up to me. So,
okay.
Shout out to her, I guess.
Right on.
And then,
all
of course,
right.
97
so
was a Survivor Series, and that's being revisited now.
Yeah.
That's and we got that. I mean, we were getting all the pay-per-views then, obviously. And that was I had gone to the Hell in the Cell a couple months before that. And you kind of again knew something was going on with Bret Hart because the whole way they promoted Bret Hart and the Patriot, as opposed to they were promoting Shawn Michaels and Undertaker at Hell in the Cell. And that was a fun show, although that was we didn't know it at the time, but that was the day that Brian Pillman died. So. That kind of took away from the show, but obviously.
But, yeah, that was a sad time.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, we were actually watching it, and he was supposed to wrestle, and we were saying,
"That's right.
Why is he not wrestling?" Because we didn't find out until they weren't going to tell the crowd that and bring them down.
Okay.
Probably crass, but maybe wise. I don't know. So.
Real quick on 97. Russo actually did a pretty decent job of booking this show because he made the New Age Outlaws the sole survivor in their match, and he made The Rock the sole survivor in his match.
Okay.
I believe he...
I'm looking at it here.
Was it Ken Shamrock?
I'm trying.
Yeah, it was Ken Shamrock. So it was people he wanted to push.
Right. Was The Rock on this show? I'm looking at 97. I'm trying to find The Rock.
The Rock was eliminated by Shamrock.
Oh, he was in Nation of Domination. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought Shamrock was going to be good then. I remember. I mean,
he should have been.
Yeah, I mean, he was a pretty decent interview. Another one of those really rare things. I'd actually seen him on this UHF station that we got, I think, in Columbia. When he was doing South Atlantic Pro Wrestling, Vince Torelli or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
I saw some of his stuff then. He was, I don't know, they were doing an interview with him. I thought he was all right. But That's a complete thing off the beaten path. So there you go.
Sure.
But, yeah. So here they're doing all pretty much all Survivor Series style matches. It looks like, for the most part, at least.
Yeah. They eased back into it.
Yeah.
But then the year after, and this is the last thing I want to go way in depth on before we breeze through the rest of it, they did the tournament.
Yeah. And I remember you asked me, you messaged me about this and said, oh, it was really good. And I was like, well, I guess The Rock was a heel then. Is that right? I'm thinking he must have.
Yeah, they did essentially a double turn. Mankind thought he was Vince McMahon's chosen
one. There you
go.
That's right. That's right. And we really wanted Mankind to win. I mean, we were, the guy, I went to that show. It was in St. Louis. And there was a crew of us that went that were kind of, ECW fans, too. And we were really excited about, hoping that he would win. And so that's right. But, in those tournaments, I mean, I could bring this up here to see the match times. But, again, the thing about Vince Russo that I've never cared for is that the wrestling matches do not have time to develop. It's just tough to watch when these matches are pretty short. I mean, I'm looking at these match times, and the championship match went 17 minutes. Nothing else went over 10. Now, you got a lot of matches to fit in, but that was kind of the thing. We were going, maybe somebody has the star ratings from those matches, and there were a lot of great matches, but we were watching it going, these matches aren't that great.
Right.
And so that was what was and again, we'd been to some good stuff with that Hell in the Cell match we'd gone to and some other things that we'd seen.
There's not a whole lot. There's like 2 8-minute matches.
Yeah.
And everything else is like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah. And they have, that's by necessity, I know, but...
Sure.
Have some double DQs or do whatever you have to do to. And there's a women's championship match on here. Why is that? I mean, why they needed to put that on there? I don't know.
Well, I can see the point of having a buffer match to give the tournament guys more time to rest, but it could have been anything else.
Yeah. No, that's true. They had a women's championship match, and then they had the tag team match before the finals. So, I guess that's true. That's true. But, That was a frustrating thing about being at that show.
Harder. That's two matches that didn't necessarily have to take place.
Right.
But I understand why they did.
Right. Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, so that's, you don't want to wrestle back-to-back matches. But again, I don't know. In the Olympics, they make them run right after themselves.
Exactly.
I mean, they're not going to promote it like a sport as much as I'd like to see. And again, I even sometimes use the word sport when I talk, which I know is a curse word in WWF. I mean, nobody's silly enough to, to not understand the way the matches are predetermined and where they're coming from. But, and this is something Wade Keller's pretty passionate about that I really agree with him on when he goes on these tangents or whatever about how within the context of the program, everything should be treated like a sport. There's no reason not to.
Sure.
You are what you are. People are going to call you pro wrestling. Vince McMahon's been trying to get people to not call it pro wrestling for 25 years, and
right. It's
not going to happen. They need to give up that ship and to say that
it's bordering on obsessive.
It's terrible. And again, I think I know it's cost them some of my money. I mean, it just annoys me, and it takes me out of the moment. It's not that I just think, oh, how dare you say that. It's like I'm watching it, and they'll say, sports entertainment, or they don't even use the word wrestling move. And I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm watching just a TV show.
Yeah. That's all it is. It's like a weekly TV show.
Yeah. It's
more than a wrestling show. Mm-hmm.
So what were the other main things? We're brazing through about 20 years of, go ahead. I don't know if you wanted to talk about, 2001 a little bit, but just the whole idea how bad they screwed up the the Alliance and the WCW takeover is probably worth mentioning, in my opinion, too. But that was a big deal. I remember we got that pay-per-view for WWE.
History repeats itself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. They did what Crockett did, exactly. I mean,
yep.
It was a damaged brand, but they could have done a lot more with that last big angle in a lot of ways than they did, instead of just, again, we know you won. We're on your TV. You bought their product. It's your job now to make
who wins and loses.
Yeah.
You know? You can
absolutely
do whatever you want with them.
Yeah, you own it.
It's your money.
You bought an asset. You bought the UWF.
Yeah.
You bought WCW. Whatever you bought, you might want to make it worth something. And I'm sure for what he paid for it and as many DVDs as I've bought out of their collection, out of the video, they probably come out okay on it. But, you know, I teach economics. It's not about whether you made a profit. It's did you maximize your profits? And I would argue they in no way maximize their profits with the purchase of WCW.
They should have spent the extra cash to get some of the bigger name guys.
Absolutely.
Right away.
Absolutely. Well, they could have brought Ric Flair in pretty easily. They didn't even
have
him.
I would have brought Flair in, Flair and Sting for sure.
Yep.
If he wanted to.
Sting
and
would
Bischoff.
Have. He's working for TNA. I mean, you know, you just got to make it right.
Yep.
No, that would have even been enough, really. But they could have got Goldberg, too. I mean, maybe they were better to wait for Goldberg because his price was probably really high. But they could have gotten Flair. They could have gotten
real high, and the return wouldn't have been as much as Flair's return.
No, it wouldn't have been. No, people never did understand that. I mean, that's something that, you know, they always kind of underwrote his value of contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, they had a weak WCW roster, and they could have, yeah, they should have spent the money. I mean, do it halfway like that? I don't know.
Take the few big names that they have left that mean anything and do something with it.
Yeah. And, you know, they could have gotten, they didn't have Scott Steiner at that time either, did they? They didn't pay for him. They could have gotten him. I mean, you know, he'd been up near the top of the cards there. And
he was probably the best thing WCW had at the end.
Yeah. No, I mean, in some of his interviews and stuff were pretty good. So,
he
I mean, I know he's a blues
can. Scary.
Yeah, he was. No, he absolutely was. But, yeah, so that was one that maybe they could have done a better job with. But it seemed like you had one other thing you really wanted to get to, and I think I've just kind of maybe broken your train of thought. I don't know.
No, all I was going to say is headline shows with, like, Flair's Goldberg, whoever, versus Austin, Rock, Undertaker, and whoever, you know?
Right, right. And instead of this attitude...
And how could that not be better than what they did?
Well, because it would have drawn money, and it would have shown that WCW had some... I think it was kind of... It's like what they did with ECW. Let's make sure that we can show that this was never a great product by butchering our TV show with their name on it. And it's so stupid. It's so short-sighted. And it's, again, it's that kind of stuff that keeps me from spending more of my money on their product. Because it's like, you know, at one point I would, you know, we used to get the WCW pay-per-views when, like, we got the Starrcade where Ric Flair won the title. I think that was like 95. And we get the ones where he actually had the title. But because, you know, but if you knew he was going to get squashed by Hulk Hogan, then we wouldn't get those pay-per-views. Because it's stuff like that is just, to some degree, and you say, well, it's all a work. But, you know, well, you don't want to see the same things over and over and over again. And you don't want to see a bad product when it could be a lot better. And it's like, yeah, I mean, they could have, but I think in some ways he does things for vanity instead of to make the most money possible. Which
that's right.
I don't own that stock for a reason, you know. So.
And 2001, this is the year where the fun started to die.
Oh, yeah. Well, ECW went under, WCW went under in a matter of months.
They had some good years afterward, but never as good, never as interesting.
Right.
And then it really went downhill.
Yes. No question.
The beginning of the end.
I would say so. I mean, it's, and again, it's, there's less, to borrow from in terms of ideas also. I mean, that's part of it. And without competition, they do the same safe things over and over again and just take what audience they can get. And, again, it sounds like I just hate their product and I'm so critical of it, and I'm really not. It's not that I think they're incompetent by any means. It's just I think they could be better. And, you know, they don't have a – you know, I mean, that was smart of you to bring up Pat Patterson. I mean, that guy was a very good booker. And
the more I watch of old-school WWF, the more I really respect Pat Patterson.
Yeah, because he's within a certain construct, and he's mm-hmm. making things make sense within that construct.
You watch those old superstars and challenge shows. Everything is, like, booked just right,
mm-hmm.
just to precision.
Well, no, and we talked about this off the air, too, or at least messaged about it. I mean, in one of the first two or three Survivor Series, you had Ronnie Garvin against Greg Valentine, which is how far down the card, I don't know. But, you know, they were battling for the figure four. I mean, you knew why everybody was on the show and who they yeah. were feuding with and what their issue was. It may have
sure.
been pretty paper thin. But you knew Dusty Rhodes was mad at the Big Boss Man. You knew that, you know, you can go
yeah.
on and on. And
let me bring up 89 real quick here.
Okay.
First match on the show. Dusty and Boss Man are mad at each other.
Right.
Tito and Martel hate each other, you know?
Yeah, they've broken up the tag team, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Honky, I think, had something going with the Rooster at the time.
Yeah, I think so.
Those matches must have been hilarious, by the way. But, anyway.
No, that's, I mean, yeah.
For these guys to be teaming and against each other.
Yeah, it all added up. That's exactly right. You know, and then obviously you get to Rick Rude and Roddy Piper had an issue. I mean, that's further down the card. But every
right.
match you could see why it was there.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, that's a typical nostalgia audio why the good old days were so much better, I guess. I don't know. And I don't, you know, well, I do mean that to some degree because they're not getting me to watch the product as much nowadays.
Right.
So.
And, I mean, we don't really need to get into anything after 2001. It's kind of a blur to me.
I couldn't remember.
It's not really interesting to me.
Well, and it's again, as you said, Dusty, if they went all Survivor Series matches on these pay-per-views,
yeah.
then you would remember them.
Yeah.
Because you'd say, oh, well, okay, that was 2003. They had all Survivor Series matches, so what were they? I mean, what was the deal? But we don't have that. And
right.
so it's just another pay-per-view. And they
yeah.
it's, again, it's this whole thing, they've made it just another pay-per-view, and then they say, well, the brand name doesn't draw. Well, you're not trying to use the brand name, so
right.
how do you know if it's going to draw or not?
Yeah,
maybe you should try
true.
To go back to
that's
all Survivor Series matches and see if it draws.
Who remembers in 2002 Kidman beating Jamie Noble for the Cruiserweight title?
You got me on that.
No
one.
What?
Yeah.
Billy Kidman doesn't remember that.
I would doubt it. I would doubt it. Absolutely. Yeah, this.
So why
the
hell is that on there?
Yeah, I marked each pay-per-view, and that was one I put an X next to because I had no recollection. Oh, they had the Elimination Chamber where Shawn Michaels came back on that one. So that was...
Right. That's the only thing I remember.
That was... I mean, you know, I was... I'm still a fan of Shawn Michaels, obviously. But yeah, no, this is brutal, some of this stuff. And it's,
yeah.
you know... You've got to fill 12 or 11 or whatever pay-per-views a year. You'd think, well, I'm repeating what we've already said, and we've gone on a long time, but they want to differentiate these pay-per-views. That was a way to do it, and they're just, for whatever reason, they want to make themselves work harder to differentiate things. I don't
know.
You
would think they would welcome the Survivor Series as, like, a crutch to avoid oversaturating singles matches.
Absolutely.
Just like the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So instead of
no, I mean, they've protected you know, that and they've used it well, and you see that it does well. I mean,
yeah.
it's an intriguing pay-per-view. That's, I didn't get that. I considered it. I think you guys did get that one. I mean, because you know it's going to be a good show, and you know you're going to get one reasonably well-booked match. It's going to take at least 45 minutes, and it's going to be worth your time.
The lesser quality Royal Rumbles are still interesting.
Right. Well, you want to, yeah, and especially, again, part of it's they have more pay-per-views, I know that, but yeah, you want to see how people are booked in it. Even the people that aren't going to win, it gives you some idea of where they stand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Anything else you want to add? I think we did a real good job for what I envisioned this to be.
Well, I hope so. Now, if anyone's still listening, you know, you can provide feedback on the boards, and I can handle any sort of constructive compliments, as Michael Scott likes to say. Obviously any sort of criticism and things of that nature, because, you know, it's fun to do. I like talking about this stuff, and I threw that out on the message board. I appreciated the offer. So it's, you know, hopefully it's been bearable for people to listen to, and they're still with us.
Sure. Yeah. No, I've wanted guest contributors for a while. So, you know, you talking about nostalgia and that post you made, you know, like, okay, here's a hook we can use, you know?
Well, in fairness, I think the original post I made was that I may as well call him out, that Greg Parks was pretty terrible on his show. And I will say this, I haven't listened to his nostalgia show since then, but I have heard him on some of the live casts. And I think he's done a good job on those. So I don't mean to be a prick or whatever. He actually surprised me when I heard him on the live cast. And I thought, you know, this guy knows his stuff and did a good job with that. So
I think
he sucked, I would say it. I mean, I don't really care what, you know, if people think I suck and they want to call me out, that's fine. But I want to be fair. I do want to be fair to the guy. I think he's done pretty well on those live casts. And I'll tell you this, that's one thing. Well, for this show, we could do it because you all have good fans. But, my God, some of those people that call in there and stutter for 5 minutes, it makes you want to – I'm listening to those at the gym a lot of times. So sometimes it pisses me off enough where I do a better job at the gym. But, God, some of those are just brutal.
I'll say two things. Greg Parks, I generally like him more than almost every other Torch contributor. I think he does a really good job. Definitely more than that other guy, anyway. And
I can't remember who you really dislike, Dusty. I know there's some that you do, but that's okay.
Oh, there are two that I really dislike, but they don't need to be brought up. Why would I put them over?
Very good. I think I can figure it out. I'm sure your listeners can.
If you've been listening to this audio for any length of time, you've heard me go off on one guy in particular. So
yes.
But yeah, the other thing I wanted to say is if we want to kind of take our site to the next level, I think we should be doing stuff like this. So, you know, it's nice to have, and I'm glad you were willing to do it.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, and, you know, I certainly don't really envision myself ever committing myself to a Bruce Mitchell type weekly thing, but from time to time these things are a lot of fun, and I'd certainly be happy to do it again if there's a way to track that, you know, a couple people actually did listen and got something out of it. So
I envision this maybe monthly
I think we could find something. I mean, I don't want to, you know, the one thing that I would say is we've talked about oversaturation. Yeah, when it's organic and there's a reason for it, I think would be great. I mean, if it's monthly, great. If it's every 6 weeks, great, whatever. But, you know, that's obviously the problem with some of these pay-per-views. They do them because they have to make a show, and that can become not as good. But, yeah, there's a lot of things to talk about, and I enjoy doing it. I mean, so yeah, I've had fun with it.
All right. Well, to wrap it up here, I definitely look forward to these in the future. We're going to dig in depth on Mid-South, UWF. We might do some NWA and WWF stuff as well. Whatever. We'll figure it out. And, I hope you listened to it, and I hope you stuck with us for the 5 hours that we did this. And, Well, thank you for listening and have a good night. Peace. All right. That's the
All
one
right.
That's paused.
Very
Not
good.
Going.
Well, thank you. That was fun.
All right, man. Yeah, thanks for doing it, and I'll see you around the board.
All right, we'll do.
All right.
All right. Take care.